I want to talk to you about the value of spiritual imagery or religious imagery, whichever way you want to put it, for the yogi. See? It's not like, oh, I look there, I see this, that, and I think, oh, I just love you, dear Krishna, beautiful Shamsundara, oh, I feel warm. Forget that. The value of religious imagery is that it is a thought form. It is a visual manifestation of a concept, and the concept is the thing that matters. There are archetypes in the mind. Jung talked about this. And he wasn't able to give it fully, and I'm nowhere as intelligent as he was, so I know I can't. But literally, everything has roots. Everything is rooted in something else. The physical entity is rooted in an astral entity, or many layers, and causal entities also. Therefore, nothing is as we think it is. So I'm talking about Sanatana Dharma and the gods, all right? Yes. These beings exist within God. There's a wonderful passage in one of the Upanishads where the student says, how many gods are there? The teacher says, 30 million. Rina, how many are there? Well, there's 10,000. How many? Is there 700? How many? Well, there's three. How many? Well, all right, there's only one. Now, it's saying to mean, as the pencil gets sharpened, at the end of the pencil gets sharpened better and better, again, what happens? The very substance of it comes down. There's just a point, the bindu. So then, it's so that there's a multiplicity and there's a unity and they're both simultaneously. And if our consciousness doesn't embrace that, well then, we've lost an incarnation. We need to work for that. Again, be a yogi. So, for example, you see here, I think, everything's a mirror image. All right, there's Ganesha. And there is Durga. They exist. They are real conscious entities. And I'm not going to go any further than that. I can say, oh, they did this, they did that, and so there they are. No. Think of them as ideas in the minds of God, but they're ideas that are living beings. Or think of them that God, you know, flies have, think, hundreds of facets to their eyes. Think of them as, and it says, you know, in the Gita, they're just my, the gods are my million faces. So think of it that way. All right, fine. But why are there specific and different forms? Why not just kind of a blob of light and say, that's it? It's because these forms, again, they're thought forms, they're archetypes. And also, when you see them with the eye can't see. We say, as far as the eye can see. Well, let me tell you, the eye doesn't see at all. The eye gets a message, and the message goes into optic nerves, and those messages go into the brain, and the witness of the brain, the buddhi, which is a whole higher level of us, sees it. But the mind itself is a field of energy, vibrating energy, it's living energy, and it's magnetic energy also. So when you look at something, call it a thread, the kahunas talk about what they call an akka thread. They say akka, of course, it comes from akasha. When you look at something, a little thread or projection or a ray of your mind, whatever you want to say, goes out and actually touches it. And some are more sensitive to the touch than others. But it really happens. And when we talk of visual things, you can truly say, well, what's really out there? We don't really know. We're just seeing an interpretation that's back in our mind. It isn't just in our brain. Our mind's beyond our brain. All right. But the mind is a field of energy that shapes itself into what it sees. So when you look at that image of Ganesha, your Ganesha is in your mind at that time. The vibration of Ganesha I'm looking at is in my mind now. So if I look at it, that which is symbolized by it, for it is also a symbol, will begin, that state of consciousness will just begin to come into my mind. Now we're on a very deep subliminal level, but it can grow and come out on the conscious level. And the same with Durga, and the same you see next to her is Shiva. These are very important. These are states of mind. These are states of consciousness. And it's multifaceted. And if it doesn't hurt God to have all these facets in his, her, its mind, it's not going to hurt your mind either. Forget the old, oh, I just sit thoughtlessly. Well, so does this container. It sits thoughtlessly. It's just a lump. It's a nothing. But you're not a nothing. So it's a silly idea that you'll get anywhere with that. And no, Sri Ramana Maharshi did not teach to do that. That's a whole question otherwise. So anyway, the imagery, now there you see, there's Ananmayma. She wasn't born, she never died. When you look at that, you begin to get a touch of that which appeared in the world as her. So there's a Ganesha consciousness, there's a Shiva consciousness, there's a Durga consciousness. And therefore, when you see them, that Devic, that divine thing, begins to come into you. And you don't need to only look at one at a time. You've got the ability to see a million things at a time if you just realize it. Therefore, having religious imagery just where you see it in the periphery of your sight. For example, I'm looking there, I'm looking at my eyes in the image. All right. But right off to this side, I have a shelf with about six images of Ganesha on it. Now I am subliminally, especially in my higher and developed mind, I am seeing Ganesha at this moment. And there is Guan Shiryen, Avalokiteshvara or Kuan Yin. I've got eight images of her are on this shelf. In front of me is Jesus. Two great Christian saints, their photographs are up higher, and they're all around here. So I'm seeing all this at the same time, and that means my mind is beginning to vibrate to the consciousness that is embodied in these beings. Now, ultimately, of course, through meditation with closed eyes, I've got to become aware of that which is truly me. But as long as I'm living in a relative world, to have all that vibration continually in my mind, you see? In other words, all that is there when I'm looking at you, and it's all in your mind also. Therefore, if there is imagery wherever you see, it'll be helpful. We have a room, our main room in the ashram, has photographs of holy people, 40 some. So no matter where we sit in that room or what direction we're in, those are all present in our mind. Here in this room, I don't know, there must be 40 or more. And first of all, you can also intuit what you don't see. So there's an visible and there's a visible presence that is also the vehicle of an invisible presence, and that's radiating at me all the time. Now, don't go out and get 50 holy pictures and stick it up all over where so people wonder if you are completely crazy. But know that having something always there within the range of your sight is valuable. And there's more than that. When you take that form, and you have it with you, and you have it where you meditate, you close your eyes, but the radiation of your aura embraces them and it begins to magnetize them. And that principle, or God, or person, whichever way you like to think of it, begins to be increasingly present, vibrating powerfully. In that. Photographs are especially sensitive. Dowsers can detect a subtle magnetism of an individual through their photograph, as long as that person is alive. When the person leaves the body, that magnetism goes. But when we're talking about great masters who cannot die, and even though their body is invisible, if their photograph is there, a connection is made with them in the higher and even the highest worlds. For example, I remember when I was living next door to Self-Realization Fellowship, and people had photos like of Yogananda and of the various holy masters and so on, and where they meditated. And people say, you know, I meditate and I open my eyes, and it looks like their eyes are moving, their eye or their eyelids are blinking. Sometimes it looks like the mouths are moving. Have I got something wrong with my eyes? In my case, I have terrible astigmatism, so naturally I think, well, is it all astigmatism? But fortunately, Sister Mira, most remarkable woman, who was one of Yogananda's very long-time disciples, when she was asked about this, she said, there is a subtle connection with the photograph and the very astral energies or astral bodies of those masters begin to manifest through them. A friend of mine was very interested in Anandamayi Ma, and you could say was devoted to her. Of course, it was just the idea, he hadn't met her, but he read about her and he had seen photographs of her, and he was very drawn to her and he wanted to go to India to meet her. And I wasn't interested at all in her. I don't mean I had an aversion to Ma. I knew about a whole lot of holy people, and so it didn't mean much to me. And he came one time, he spent a week or two with me. We'd meditate together. And he had about an 8x10 or an even larger photo of Anandamayi Ma, where she was looking down, like I'm looking down now. She was not looking up at the, in a sense, the person who would be looking at her photo. So we would meditate, and then at the end of meditation, when I opened my eyes, if I would look at her photo, her eyes would fully open and she would look at me absolutely directly. And whoosh, I would say I felt something. And this would happen daily. And some people are dense. And therefore, when the photo would do this, I would actually say to her, What are you looking at me for? Charlie's your devotee, not me. But you know, I went many times to see Ma and travel with Ma, and Charlie never went. So you could say that she knew who was going come through or not. But so it is, you see, these divine presences are here and they vibrate through, again, their depictions. This is why temples are so important. If you have a Krishna temple and the prana pratishtha has been done, the life has been put in the image, Krishna's life is in there and Krishna is there. The image is in Krishna. But Krishna is living through the image. There was an image of Krishna in the Birla temple in Delhi, in a satsang hall, a huge satsang hall. The image must have been, oh, I'm sure it was 10, 12 feet high of Krishna. And he was at one end of the hall. And that image was alive. And his chest rose and fell with breath. And it's just fine if you don't believe that. Because I hadn't believed it at times when I heard about it, though I remember someone before I went to India showed me a statue of Kali, a photo. And he said, people say she's a Jagrat Murti, it means a living image, and that you can see her breath, her breathing. So I saw it clearly. So I used to go and sit there and just watch Krishna breathe. And more than that, people came in a constant stream and they would go up and touch the image's feet. You can't do that normally in a temple because the deity is in a separate place, or like a little room inside a bigger room. But people would come in a constant stream and they would touch his feet. And I could see the expression on his face changed according each time a different one touched him. And I could tell who was his devotee and who wasn't, and who'd come just for a rote and didn't. And believe me, it would show. Well, or believe me, I saw what I thought meant, because you don't have to really believe me. So you see, but I took other people there and said, watch. And they say, well, he's breathing. I didn't have to cue the man. I said, yes, he's breathing. Stone doesn't breathe. But you see, the overshadowing presence of Krishna, invisible in a way, was yet making the life force, the prana, manifest. And that's not a bad idea of having great masters and great deities living in your house. So, if you meditate, they will come. You won't ever be alone. You see, phony mysticism says, oh, God is beyond it all. God is formless, unspeakable, inexpressible. And I just have just a bare room to meditate in. Sure, because you want to think of yourself only and you want to be the only person there. And guess what? You've got what you want. You got yourself. If you're satisfied with that, it's good with me. But the real thing is, you do what you can to deal with yourself. We're vegetarians. Why? The body isn't our soul. Eating meat doesn't affect our soul. Taking drugs doesn't affect our soul. Drinking booze and getting drunk doesn't affect our soul. But it affects the vehicle of our soul. And therefore, things can damage and prevent the real us from coming through our vehicle. So, again, as usual, I've taken long. It is really valuable. And again, it's up to you. But There is life in everything, so why should there not be life in the image? There is a shrine in Eastern India called Sakshi Gopal. The image was originally somewhere over in the western part of India. And a vow was made, and this man who believed in the Lord Krishna wanted there to be the vow to be made in the presence of a worthy person by whoever he was dealing with. And so he brought the person to the image and said, "Here is Krishna himself. Take a vow. Take a vow in front of Krishna." We took the vow. He didn't follow the vow, and he went to live off in the eastern part. And so this man, who was, of course, a saint, said, "Gopalji, you come with me. This is not a myth. You come with me, and we'll go and you confront him. He hasn't kept his vow." And Gopala walked with him, the Krishna image walked with him, came right near to where the man lived, and then Krishna said, "I'm here. You call him." He came. He was, shall we say, impressed. And then Krishna just was an image again. But it's there now, and people go there on pilgrimage. The witness Gopala. See? Why shouldn't it happen in your life? Why shouldn't it happen where you live? If you wanted to. Therefore, I urge you to experiment with spiritual religious imagery and see for yourself what it means.